In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, the Boston Celtics are NBA champions. They beat the Dallas Mavericks last night. Celtics just tore through the playoffs. They were clearly the best team in this thing. I would have loved to have seen them play Denver, but Denver did not oblige. Celtics win the NBA championship. They go 16-3 in the postseason this year. A few local Houston thoughts on the NBA Finals. Seth, my first one was watching the celebration last night.
Yeah.
And thinking to myself, man, Ime Udoka, who just coached the Celtics in the finals 2 years ago against the Golden State Warriors back in 2022, was let go by the Celtics, not because of his coaching acumen or his coaching skills. He was let go because some things went on behind the scenes there.
Unfortunate relationship.
Yes. Yeah. Some bad decisions. He's back here with the Rockets, and we're thrilled that he's the Rockets head coach, and I feel great about the future of the Rockets, not only because of the players, but because of Udoka himself. He's a huge reason, maybe the biggest reason, why they went from 20 wins or whatever it was two seasons ago to 41-41 this past season. He's the biggest reason. But in watching that celebration last night, I couldn't help but try to put myself in his shoes for a moment and go, man, if I had just shown some restraint, I would be probably looking at two finals appearances in my first 3 years as a coach with an NBA title already with a nucleus that is locked in, you know, and young set to go.
Yeah, I think that it's probably not an awesome feeling, and yet at the same time, I would imagine he doesn't feel like he got screwed over or anything in Boston. No. So, like, it's something that's very much in his control. So it's very easy to turn whatever, either envy or regret over that, into motivation. It's not like he's sitting in some bar without a job, like wondering about what might have been. It's more, if anything, kind of like proof in the pudding that, yeah, he could be on that track and that could be him. It's just, you got to get it done with this squad here right now.
Yeah. And I think, like, AJ Hinch to me is a similar, I was thinking the same thing about Hinch this weekend when the Astros were playing the Tigers. Obviously very different circumstances surrounding his firing than Udoka's, different sport, obviously. But I think a similar dynamic in that, look, if you're going to be considered the best of the best at what you do, a lot of it is what gets put around you as far as a roster goes. You know, there's a lot of great coaches that have not had great coaching careers because they haven't had the talent put around them to win at a high level. And if you're a coach, I would imagine, you know, being mentioned in a conversation about the Hall of Fame someday is a goal. It would be for me. Like Hinch, I thought about that. I'm like, man, Hinch has probably watched 2020 through 2023. Like, man, if that gets tacked onto the resume I already had with the Astros, I'm on the short list of great managers from this era of baseball.
Well, and with Hinch, unlike with, you know, Hinch, you know, can't be completely and totally excused for things that went on while he was manager.
Yeah.
But there are things, and people have talked about this, the dynamic of a major league manager is different than, you know, a college football coach. And the veterans on your squad, especially the guys that you brought in, like Carlos Beltran, to be the leaders, those guys have a lot more say and a lot more sway and aren't necessarily, no matter how many times you smash a clubhouse monitor to try to show your disgust with what's going on, that doesn't necessarily do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, he might feel like, man, if it just had not been for a few little things, if that memo had actually been just simply, if that memo that was sent out to the league had actually been distributed to the players by Jeff Luhnow the way it was supposed to, that maybe none of this would have happened and we'd just still be cruising on to greatness, and I would have been the I would have been the manager for a second World Series.
He'd have been the manager. Luno's probably still
the GM.
In
his mind, maybe he feels like, yeah, and actually, maybe we probably would have won one of those World Series too, an extra one, you know?
Yeah, yeah, maybe so. So that's number one. You know, what is Ime Udoka thinking watching that? I agree with you. I think he's probably he's motivated to make sure that celebration he was watching happens here in Houston someday, which brings me to my second point. This isn't just about the Celtics, but just the NBA in general. It does feel like we're kind of heading into a period here where things are a little bit more random than they were for a period of time. You know, back when the Rockets were really, really good last time, you were living in the same world as the Warriors. You were screwed. It feels less like you're screwed this time. It feels like if this nucleus develops the way they can, if they put the finishing touches on it, and Udoka is who we think he is as a coach, the Rockets have a good chance of putting themselves right into the mix here with these teams.
There's not that evil empire out there in the form of one team that's just that you can't get past.
Yeah.
It's wide open. There's a very good chance that you could be. It's anybody's position to have if you just go out and seize it. Yeah.
Like the Celtics aren't a super team. I know they had a record in the postseason that would be indicative of a super team. I think it was more like they faced the Heat without Jimmy Butler. They went against the Cavs, who never get it done in the postseason unless LeBron's on their team. Tyrese Halliburton was gone when they were playing the Pacers. You know, they had a lot of injury. Luka was kind of banged up in this series too. They had a lot of injury luck along the way.
Who's the? Are you excited for playoff Jalen Green? Are you?
I don't know.
I mean, that's if we want to start, you know, thinking about, all right, who could potentially be the Doncic or the Kyrie Irving or whomever else that
on this team
falls apart? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the
we don't even know. We don't have a clue. We haven't come anywhere close to anything like this.
No.
In terms of, all right, who's built for crunch time or not?
The team wants it to be Jalen. I feel really strongly about that. They want it to be Jalen.
Want it to be Jalen that falls apart?
No. That's the guy.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Okay. That's the guy. I think they want him to be the guy.
If you want Jalen Green to be Doncic in the NBA Finals, I don't think that's what you want, Sean.
I don't. Yeah. Boy, it'd be fun to get to the NBA Finals, though. That would be really cool.
That would be a good time. Kyrie Irving was worse than his box score would suggest. Because he was, what, 5 for 13
He was 5 for 16 last night.
5 for 16. Yeah. And I think he made 3 shots in the fourth quarter.
Did he really? Okay. Anything after the first quarter is garbage.
It wasn't a great effort.
No, not a great postseason for Kyrie. Not a great finals for Kyrie Irving.
Honestly, I've been watching this in like the worst possible human being. This NBA playoffs, I loved watching James Harden fall apart in the playoffs.
Yeah,
I just absolutely collapse in the playoffs. I loved watching Doncic and to fall apart in the finals. I'm all for people having their hopes and dreams dashed,
dude,
by somebody who's not as perfect as everybody thought he was.
I'm 100% with you on that. Half of my football watching during the season is, oh, the Jets are on. Well, the Jets a bad example because Aaron Rodgers played 4 plays last year. But I promise you this year, when the Jets are on all those primetime games, I will be rooting for the Jets to fall on their face. That's fun, you know? Especially in seasons, Pat. I probably got more in tune with doing this, Seth, when it was just so futile rooting for the Texans for a few years there. I'm like, all right, well, I need a reason other than gambling to watch some of these games. All right, who can I hate? Well, it turns out I hate Russell Wilson. Turns out I'm not real fond of Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers either. Okay.
If it comes to the Schadenfreude scale of like, okay, who do I eagerly anticipate failing? It's tough. This one's tough because I really admire Lamar Jackson's game. And yet at the same time, especially after, you know, 1 week after getting destroyed by the Ravens, it was kind of fun to see playoff Lamar Jackson, even though that game was way closer than you remember it, and even though it was a wide receiver drop or fumble that really was the thing in that game, I did love seeing Baltimore Ravens fans have to deal with their team not being as good in the postseason as they were in the regular season.
The fans.
I kind of enjoyed that because we'd had to listen to a whole lot of smack talk from the Ravens after that game about how, you know, CJ Stroud wasn't as good as everybody thought he was, or all this, that, and the other.
Yeah. we'll get to play all of them this year again.
Who are the NFL? Are there any guys that jump to mind that you're like kind of hoping for their playoff collapse more so than?
In the NFL?
Yeah.
In the NFL? Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like I root against quarterbacks. So yeah, Aaron Rodgers for sure. You know what? Sean Payton. This era of Denver Broncos football that we're about to head into here, where the Broncos are abysmal, is going to be fascinating and fun to watch for me. Not a big Payton guy. Not a big Payton guy at all.
No, Sean Payton. When you just hear about what players say or just whatever, I think Drew Brees probably doesn't get enough credit for working with Sean Payton as well as he did. I think Sean Payton can be tough on his quarterbacks. And I wonder, with young quarterbacks especially, how that would have gone with C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
I'm not even trying to be snarky towards Sean Payton. I think it was the perfect blend of circumstance there with C.J. Stroud and with a guy from the Shanahan system, where there's just more of a... And with Bobby Slowick and his personality, I think Bobby's not... He's built like a good baseball player. I don't think he's ever going to get too high with the highs or too low with the lows. You just kind of see problems and you just methodically go through them. I thought that the way they handled C.J. Stroud right from the onset and having him at least feel like he had to compete for the job and everything else, I thought that they handled him perfectly. I don't know if it would have been as seamless with Sean Payton.
Yeah, you had pointed out when they drafted him, I think it was not when they drafted him, when we were talking about CJ leading up to it. It might have been before they even hired Slowick, possibly, although that would have been in February. But you made a point multiple times about what a great system fit CJ was going to be in this thing, and it worked out exactly that way, man. Oiler girl, not Houston Oiler, Edmonton Oiler. I'll be honest with you, Seth, I don't even know what the score is right now in the Stanley Cup Finals, but I'm still all about Oiler girl, and you know who I'm talking about, because I know you complained about her popping up on your Twitter timeline out in public from time
to time.
Yeah,
she was after a big Oilers victory in the playoffs. She lifted her shirt up and flashed the ice, and it was captured on video. And then it was popping up on my timeline all the time, not blurred out or anything.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting next to a little old lady at the doctor's office, and that popped up.
Right.
And I know what you're thinking out there. Well, Seth, the algorithm knows you. I don't think so, because this is the only thing, this is the only situation that happened. I don't have this issue anytime else other than this one woman who kept popping up on my timeline. I saw her a lot. I saw her a lot. And she was a topic of conversation for a lot of people.
She was. She OnlyFans reached out to her to see if she wanted to maybe start an account. Cam Soda reached out to her, because that's what Cam Soda does. They're really good at glomming on publicity-wise.
They make public offers for employment to people that most people are never going to accept it.
Right.
It's like, hey, Dick Cheney, you want to be a porn star? And all of a sudden it gets a headline like Dick Cheney offered an OnlyFans account or a Cam Soda account. Yeah.
Apparently, okay, now I can see why she popped up yesterday coming at the internet. Apparently the internet's coming after her, and I'm guessing it's because her Oilers are down 3-1 to the Florida Panthers right now. So I'm guessing that's why. So the Florida Panthers lead the Edmonton Oilers in the Stanley Cup Finals 3-1. Here is Oiler girl. Now, to set the stage, she's standing underneath a huge bridge, on some grass.
Yeah, it looks like
next
a place
a
you
river.
Might go to score some meth.
Yeah, or whack somebody, you know?
Right. So when she describes this as the way she does, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
This looked like the industrial side of town that you go to dump a body.
Yes. Yeah, here it is.
Oilers girl. Actually, my name's Kate, but here we are. So I've thought long and hard about what I wanted to say to everybody. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm at one of my favorite places right now. Come here to do some thinking, we'll call it. But I just wanted to say, you could be the most perfect godly f-ing person in the world. You could save kittens from a river if they were drowning. Someone's still gonna hate you. So you know what? At the end of the day, I got drunk and whipped my f-ing out at an Oilers game and they went viral. F-ing you if you don't like it. Go Oilers.
Yeah,
that'll stop any negativity on social media right there. That's what we've been waiting for on social media, is an admonishment. And now finally the toxicity will stop. I don't even know, has she faced that much criticism? I think people are mean online. And the more clicks you're getting, the more mean people are going to show up. That's the way it works.
I didn't see anything worth criticizing in the video that was out there.
I'll say after seeing this video, I thought it was more of a middle-aged lady when I saw the video, I was like, oh, good for her.
Yeah.
It's like she got some new cans and she's showing them off to the world. Good for her.
Yeah.
And now it looks like maybe by this video, it looks like she might be more in her mid-20s or
like
so.
Younger. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, I question a little bit what her motives in doing that video are, because she said two things. First, she opened up with long and hard, and then she said, this is where I go to do some thinking, if that's what you want to call it. It looks like a place you go to turn tricks. It looks like something you would see in a movie where car. I don't know what her deal is. But I know the negativity is going to stop now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
thank
yeah.
you, Oilers girl. Yeah. And yeah. good luck after Amy Adams Strunk sues you for using Oilers in
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Glad we got Oiler girl out there. All right, let's circle back to the Astros. Big reunions going on in Chicago tonight. Dana Brown, he looked like he tried to distance himself a little bit from Jose Abreu. I would say maybe in addition to distancing himself from Abreu, maybe take a bow for some of the things going on off the grid with the Astros right now. We'll explain coming up next.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Well, no, I mean, I led this thing myself. Ultimately, as a GM, I always talk to my owner in terms of, giving him my thought process. And, I talk to Jim, but I pretty much led the process.
All right, that was Dana Brown on Friday talking about releasing Jose Abreu. So Dana Brown is taking ownership of the decision to finally cut him loose. I think it's safe to assume this was a group decision, given all the people involved in bringing Abreu in. As Dana Brown, as you'll hear in a moment, Dana Brown pointed out, this is a transaction that took place before he took over as the general manager.
Right, yeah.
But very much a process in unloading Jose Abreu that Dana Brown probably... Hey, guys, hey.
Like at some point, everything was complicated with all of this because Jose Abreu, who had such a nice stretch in September and October of last year. I think that's at least part of it. It's that, man, if he had never had that run at the end, then it might have been a lot easier to say, all right, well, all is lost.
Yes.
The other part of it that made it kind of difficult is that this was, in terms of declines at the end of a career that aren't really specifically tied to injuries or big injuries, even though he's been banged up a little bit. It was a drastic decline. And I think that Bagwell was probably correct when he said that the analytics people were on board with signing Jose Abreu last year. Now, I don't know if they were on board with the numbers or anything else like that, but I will partially excuse them for not anticipating that the decline would be this bad. Now, sticking by him when he was really just not showing any signs of improving after the West Palm Beach experiment and all of that, Dana Brown is at least, he's attached to that. I don't know how much of a driving force he was with all of that, but he's attached to that. Yep. So he can't distance himself completely from it.
We played multiple clips earlier in the show of Dana Brown to various degrees, I think, pointing out that of the Abreu signing preceded his becoming general manager here. I'll just play the one that I think most indicates Dana Brown, pointing out, hey, I don't know, man. I wasn't here when they signed Jose Abreu.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the end. You know, last year Pujols got released and he ended up with the Cardinals and, you know, did a pretty good job there. But as far as his legacy in the game, I mean, the guy was an MVP. That's very hard to do in the major leagues. And so, you know, when you guys signed him, prior to me getting here, I think this guy was on the market. There were a lot of teams that liked him. And so ultimately, you know, a first baseman with, he had close to an 850 OPS for his career. And so, you know, he had a good run. He had a really good run, signed in international, you know, the international signing.
We're good, Ben. We're good. Yeah, when you guys signed, that just
did he pull out a baseball card and look at the back of it?
It tickles me. This is going to do some serious damage. This whole sequence of events the last couple weeks, really the last couple months.
Yeah.
By months, I mean years, are really going to do some damage to the back of that old baseball card right there.
Tops the industry itself, Sean, I think. The Astros have done irreparable damage to Tops, and I expect a lawsuit at some point.
Class action lawsuit for any.
Devalued the back of the baseball card.
That's it. Now, Dana Brown, I mean, some good news in the system here. I think if there were if you look at Dana Brown's background, and you go, okay, what's the reason why Dana Brown got this job as general manager of the Astros? I would say it's his ability. Like this Atlanta Braves baseball team, which is one of the most talented in baseball when it's fully healthy.
Yeah.
Even when they're not healthy, they're still super talented. They're missing Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna, and it's still a really good baseball team. Dana Brown had huge responsibility in putting that team together and the scouting and the drafting of that team. And he's had one draft to be the GM of the Astros, and so far so good. As Astros Future tweeted out, Seth, there's several guys here that are already at AA from their draft class, and they're putting up pretty big numbers right
from
now.
From the 2023 draft class, Bryce Matthews, Jake Bloss, Jon Williams, and Ferreras, that kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like those guys, they've so far been good draft picks. And I think a lot of the if you go into the Moneyball, you know, dynamic of old school scouts versus analytical dudes and everything, it's not nearly as big a divide as it once was, but there is still a little bit of that. And I do think that Dana Brown falls more into an old school scout who does a lot of the old school things, but he also has an appreciation of and utilizes the analytics. I feel like if you're an old school person, there's probably something about Dana Brown just simply drafting well and recognizing prospects that can elevate quickly that you got to feel good about. But taking that long-term view of like, hey, yeah, boy, 2 or 3 years from now when all these draft picks start potentially reaching the major leagues, then that's where you're really cooking. We're impatient with that because we feel like we're still in the World Series window for these Astros.
Yeah, that's what...
At least we did not too long ago.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, do you think Dana Brown wants to be a buyer at the deadline this year? Because on the one hand, if you're a buyer, it means you're relevant again. But on the other hand, if you're a buyer, it means that what I think he probably views as his putting his fingerprints on the future of this organization gets gutted to some degree, you know?
Well, he had actually mentioned in one of his clips that he wasn't gung-ho about trading prospects.
Yeah.
Obviously you can't trade picks, but trading prospects for a current player. It would be a player-for-player swap of some sort.
Okay.
It's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And I mean, that makes sense. And honestly, that's where this team is. It's hard, and this I fall into this trap. For years, the Astros pipeline would be ranked pretty low. But meanwhile, like guys like Jeremy Pena weren't in the top 100 prospects. The people that put together those rankings and ratings were ignoring guys like Framber Valdez or Christian Javier or Jeremy Pena, and the Astros were just kind of evaluating guys on a different basis. I think everything like has kind of closed in now to where, all right, the pipeline deficits are way more real now than they were before.
Yeah, the rankings match what reality probably looks like.
Yeah, so it's a plea for the long play that's never feels as good in the moment. You know,
no.
Hey, don't worry, everything's going to be fine 3 years from now.
No. Boy, and yet a Pete Alonso trade would get me pretty fired up right now. Getting that bat in the middle of the lineup would be good. But might cost you a couple of these guys that you just named that got called.
Alonso, the whole thing with Alonso too is that he's not having an awesome year. Or you know, if Goldschmidt, perhaps like some of the names out there, I like the idea of Alonso, but it comes with, hey, all right, yeah, he's been kind of slow in the first half of the season, but maybe this spark of coming to this team is going to be what turns him around. So I don't have an insatiable appetite for Pete Alonso.
I need to see how many of his fly balls to left field would have been home runs in Minute Maid Park. That's what I need.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a website somewhere that will tell me where I can go find everywhere that Pete Alonso's fly balls were caught this year. And then I can do an overlay of Minute Maid Park and go, wow, well, eight of these would have been home runs at Minute Maid Park. And now all of a sudden we're talking about Pete Alonso being in the home run derby and having big numbers. I don't know. The ballpark is nice and tailored to him, but
it's not like he's been bad or anything. He's not playing at an all-star level necessarily.
No.
He's got a 781 OPS, but he's also, he's 29 years old. I don't think he's going to all of a sudden age into a decrepit old man the way Jose Abreu did.
I don't either. He's a rental, though. Like, have him for the rest of this year, and then he's a free agent after this year. And that is one thing Dana Brown mentioned as well on Friday about, when he started, the conversation shifted from Abreu to, okay, where do we go from here? Yeah. He pointed that out. He said, look, even the Verlander trade last year, we traded two really good prospects for Verlander. It's because we had him under contract for 23, 24, and if he hits 140 innings, 25 at a nice rate because the Mets are footing the bill for it,
mm-hmm.
for most of it, half of it, a big chunk of it.
The big question will be, all right, we went over John Singleton's numbers yesterday of how he did while Jose Abreu was down on his minor league assignment, rookie league assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was he was putting up basically Pete Alonso's numbers during that break. So the question is now maybe over these next few weeks, you start to see how John Singleton does. And if he sustains kind of that performance when he was getting more regular at bats and playing time, then you can solely focus perhaps on a starting pitcher, especially if you start thinking about, man, maybe Yiner needs to play some more first base, because catcher trying to do both hit and catch might be at one point it was harming the baseball side of thing. Now it looks like it might be harming the catching side of things.
Yeah.
So in my heart of hearts, like, forget compensation and everything else like that. A starting pitcher would be really, really nice.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, no, definitely. That and that's the that's the double whammy in the decision to try to stick it out another month with Abreu is you may have had a solution at first base that was totally viable and you it's like you're sticking a pin in a balloon, and now Singleton is having to ramp back up to get back to being a 787 OPS guy. It was really looking like Singleton was taking to the at-bats,
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate. Very unfortunate. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
It's one of the great tragedies of our time, Sean.
Really is.
It'll be in history books.
Shakespearean, for
sure.
The
uncensored ones, yes.
Shakespearean. That's what did I hear Shakespeare? Oh, it was last night. Amy and I got watching the 30 for 30 about June 17th, 1994. The day of the Bronco chase, and on that same day, like, the Stanley Cup Finals in New York parade was going on, and the Rockets were playing. It was like the World Cup was going on in the United States. It was like the biggest day of sports, especially when you throw OJ into it. And that was, they had a lot of the NBC footage on there of the Bronco chase. And, they're cutting over to Tom Brokaw from the NBA Finals. Kostas is tossing it to Brokaw, and he's like, thanks, Bob. And over here, we have a tragedy of Shakespearean proportions playing out on the freeways of Los Angeles.
Oh, Kostas. Yeah.
No, it was Brokaw doing that. Yeah.
Oh, Brokaw, okay. But
Kostas is probably pretty jealous. Shakespearean. I wish I'd used that.
I have no idea. Is that Shakespeare? I guess it is kind of like probably... There might be a little bit more folly involved with Shakespeare. There's nothing funny about the OJ chase, really.
No. But you know what Brokaw knew? 97% of the people aren't even going to think that deeply about it. They're going to be like, wow, yeah, big word, Shakespearean.
You know what helped me out when I got into college and I was kind of dabbling around, like taking some English classes and stuff? Was like at a certain point I realized, like, oh, all these highfalutin, like wannabe intellectuals, they're doing the exact same thing me and my buddies do, which is like quoting Fletch or quoting Caddyshack or whatever. Like, they're just doing it with different source material.
Yes.
It's like, oh, okay, I'm awesome at this. I can drop in a catchphrase like nobody's business. But then people think you're super smart if you do it. You just got to read the actual stuff. Yeah, and then there you go. I cracked the code. It was no different than quoting Caddyshack.
It's the same thing. I'm just quoting smarter, stranger versions of English here. Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. There is a college football coach who is hopping mad right now at the school he used to work at. He's suing them right now. He's suing them for wins. We'll let you hear this. If I had to pick a coach who's doing this.
That was downright Shakespearean, Sean. It was. The way you did that, yes.
Shakespearean.
I appreciated that.
Bordering on Machiavellian, yes. We'll tell you all about it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And twice this week now, the really weird rule that the College Football Hall of Fame has where they won't let somebody in if their winning percentage is below 60% has come up twice now. Mike Leach yesterday. Mike Leach over the weekend. I don't know if people are up in arms about that. That's been something for a while now where the late Mike Leach, his winning percentage is 0.596. You got to be at 60% to get in. So there's a lot of people, you know, saying, hey, man, like, how about a little leeway? You know, he's an innovator. Like, there's a lot of these offenses out here that trace their roots back to Mike Leach and Hal Mumme and the air raid and things like that. This one's a little different. Les Miles, who we'll hear from here shortly. But Les Miles, best known for his run at LSU, where he won a national championship in 2007, made it to the BCS title game against Alabama in 2011 and lost. He had a nice run at LSU. He was very successful. However, in 2023, the school, as a punishment from the NCAA, vacated 37 wins for Les Miles from the seasons 2012 through 2015 because of some impermissible benefits given to the father of a player on those teams named Vidal Alexander. A former booster gave money, impermissible benefits, to the father of Vidal Alexander. So the school vacated all of those wins for those years. If you go to Les Miles' Wikipedia page, Seth, and it has the back of his college football coaching card, so to speak.
Yeah.
Zero wins on his Wikipedia page for those 4 years. They don't even have the real number on there. They have the vacated number on there.
Zero wins, but also zero losses, but still.
The losses are still there.
Obviously. Yeah. So all the losses, that's the big whammy there.
Yep.
And that knocks him down below that 60% winning percentage that you need to be eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yes, by an even narrower margin than Leach. This knocks Les Miles down to 0.597. Now, Miles had a run at Oklahoma State that was pretty good. That got him the LSU job. And then he got fired at LSU in 2016. He was out of coaching for a couple of years and then hooked on with Kansas, which is really what probably did just as much damage as vacating wins. His 3-18 run at Kansas over a two-year period from 2019 to 2020. That was a bad Kansas team that he was.
That's one thing. I wonder if there was anything that he was even really conscious of or aware of or thinking about during that time. Somebody must have pointed it out to him at some point, right? Like, hey, if you don't turn this around, or if we have a bad season again next year, you're actually going to knock your way out of
because the wins didn't get vacated till 2023.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Okay. Yeah, so he's probably like, I got plenty of cushion. I can collect my $4 million from Kansas, and I'm in easily. This is important to him.
You know, it's not an issue for Mac Brown. Mac Brown has gone and done very well for himself.
Second
at UNC.
Act. Yeah.
So that's, but now he hasn't had any of his old victories vacated.
Right.
You know who suffers from this as well? Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's not eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame.
His is a different rule. It's because he only coached in college for 9 years, not 10. You have to coach
at least
10 years. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So his.
These are all such weird, arbitrary, stupid
for
things.
For a sport that decides everything with voters.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's crazy. They have selection committees to decide the playoff. But yeah. So Les Miles is suing LSU. He's suing everybody. As they said back at the Jerky Boys, sue everybody. And he is. He's suing LSU. He is suing the NCAA. He's suing the National Football Foundation, which manages the College Football Hall of Fame. He wants his wins back, at least a few of them, just to get him over the top to put him in the Hall of Fame.
I wonder if the so all of these various organizations, I feel like I'm always intrigued by when colleges get sued, because I always just assume they've got like this huge, like this team of super lawyers that'll work pro bono to defend their alma mater. I don't know. That's probably not the way it actually works, but that's the way I envision it. Like their whole law school staff has to work on the side to come up with the best arguments against them. The NCAA, I have a, you know what, Sean, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to confess to something here.
Okay.
How is the NCAA doing right now? like financially, like I have zero. It seems like they just take hit after hit after hit.
Well,
and yet college football itself and NCAA football is incredibly popular.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how all of this turmoil from the last few years has actually affected the business side of the NCAA.
Well, I don't even know what the recourse is. Like, is Les just looking to get the wins back, or is he looking to get money because he can't get into the Hall of Fame?
The pain and suffering that he's going to have from not getting into the Hall of Fame.
All the autograph sessions he'd get where he could write HOF below his name, below his autograph, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
College Football Hall of Fame isn't nearly as big a deal as a lot of the pro sports Hall of Fame.
No. The classes every year are like 20 people. No disrespect to anybody who's in the College Football Hall of Fame, but it's not as exclusive.
It's not like an extra income stream in retirement, I don't think. The thing that matters for college coaches was the alumni from that college where you succeeded.
Yes.
And those are the people who want to hear you speak and want to pay for autographs and everything.
Yep. Success as a head coach and the Heisman Trophy. Those are the two gravy trains that sustain you after you're done doing either of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I would give Les Miles, how many wins does he need to get back to 60%? Probably like 3 or 4. I would give those back to him right now just based on this exchange. When Rich Lord and I were recording an interview with him for the Texas Bowl back in 2015, when LSU came here and played and I don't know who the sponsor was back then, but the Texas Bowl, we were recording an interview to run on the Triple Threat, and Rich asked Les a question that he did not like.
Coach, I know you've got a lot on your plate getting ready for this game, and the last thing you needed this week was to answer questions about a possible job change, but it seems like every few years, and I think this is like the third time in the last 6 or 7 years, at this time of year specifically, you've had to say, no, I'm not leaving LSU to go to Michigan. I know you played there. I know you coached there. I would imagine heading into the meat of recruiting season, this can be a little troubling at times. Did he hang up?
No.
Oh, Coach, I thought I heard a click. I thought you really didn't like that question.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, does it become something that maybe even makes you
Excuse
wonder?
Excuse me, do you have to understand? I am preparing for a great bowl game. I got a wonderful team, and I am taking my own time to do this. So you want to continue this interview, then let's do so, and you edit, because this is being taped, and let's go. And don't ask that question. It's one of those things you should have asked me before we got on the air.
No problem, Coach.
Okay, I'll wait.
Had you gotten instructions not to ask about that?
No. Nope. Yeah, we had. We definitely had not. We wouldn't have done it.
Part of being a college coach is that you're always recruiting. So like him saying like, I'm taking my own time to do this. Like, no, that's why college coaches are better interviews than NFL coaches, because college coaches are always recruiting.
Yes.
So I don't buy that from him that like, I'm taking my own time to do this. And you asked me a question that I totally have an answer at the ready for. Like,
I'm taking my own time to do this interview on the most popular sports station in one of the biggest recruiting hotbeds. So you better edit this and let's get going, okay?
Yeah,
Richard
Lord.
I side with Rich on that one. I didn't even think Rich put the question in a way that set Les up to look bad.
It sounded like, honestly, Rich asked it in a way that was almost sounded sympathetic towards him.
Yes.
Like, oh, it sounds like it sucks, doesn't it, that you have to do all this stuff. I didn't think it was like a hard-hitting gotcha type of scenario.
Could have said, this is what comes with success for the, for our program and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And instead, he got mad at poor Rich Lord, man.
I'm always surprised. Now, for the most part, Les would usually have good answers for stuff like that. I'm always surprised, though, when coaches get to the end of a successful season, and after years of growing up watching sports and being in the coaching business for usually a good amount of time, that sometimes they seem so capsized by that question. They're like, it's so easy to give a non-answer about focusing and staying straight ahead and whatever, my agent handles anything else like that. There are 10 different ways that you can deflect that question. And yet, I guess it speaks to the stress of the coaching profession, I think.
I guess.
The stress of coaching, recruiting, all of that going on, that sometimes they just snap.
Well, and Les was on his, he was on his last legs as the LSU coach at that point. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he got fired midway through the next season, I think, in 2016.
Well, that season would have been when they almost, like, it was all but a done deal that they were going to fire him. But the LSU, the plan to hire a replacement, what, they didn't have enough ducks in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And they remember? They backtracked on it. It was just, it was an ugly scenario there for a while.
Yep. So that was a text message. There's that gotcha journalist, Rich Lord.
Yeah,
yes. He's known for that kind of thing.
My favorite thing about Rich there was just how easily he rolled with punches like that.
Oh, dude.
I know that probably didn't affect his day one tiny iota afterwards, did it? There was no part of him that was like, should I? Oh boy, I shouldn't have done it. I should have done it differently.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
Like, even in that moment, I don't think it was really, there was no part of him that was like, all right. He was like, okay, all right.
Right.
On to the next question.
On to the next one. Yeah, and then you know, probably walking like out of the studio, and I was like, man, Rich, how about that moment right there? And Rich probably like, bleep that guy. You know? Hello, gentlemen. Brandon Scott and John Lopez are here. What's happening?
And you know, I liked and enjoyed Rich, but he wasn't like a rabble rouser to me. Like, he was fun and enjoyable, but I didn't feel like he was necessarily trying to shake the table. So it was shocking that Les Miles, also somebody who wasn't necessarily the super serious figure, would act like that. I was real surprised by that.
I do think Rich liked asking hard questions of interview subjects sometimes. Like, I think
he was good at it.
I do think he enjoyed that. Yeah.
He was good at it.
Yeah. Probably most notably, Ted Johnson pointed this out when he was on with us. When Ted and Rich were both on for 610 Day last Monday. And Ted, who of course arranged the relationship that the station sustains to this day with Lisa Ann, Ted set that all up to begin with back
Ted.
2017. And this is back when Rich was like super, this is before Lisa Ann became Rich's favorite person on earth.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Once he met her, he, like butter, you know what I mean? But Rich was super skeptical about using her as our fantasy football expert.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time,
butter?
The first time we ever had her on, Rich started peppering her with obscure questions about like third string receivers.
Oh, wow.
And stuff.
Testing
her.
Oh,
not, like to try to expose
but
her.
But not even like saying it was a test. Like, Rich, like, you know, like we would ask about, you know, Deshaun Watson. Ted would ask about Tom Brady. And then here's Rich asking about Sterling Shepard or something like that.
And she nailed it, right?
Nailed it. Yeah, nailed it. So anyways, that was pretty funny. How you guys doing?
Oh, awesome, man. I mean, what's there not to feel good about?
I don't know, man. We got the little Strohs, a little reunion tonight with Maldi. I said earlier in the show, I think Astro fans would drive Joe Espada to the airport if they hired Maldonado as the manager this week. I think people like Maldi still, and I think he's going to be a manager
in that role.
Someday.
I think you might be right.
I think he's going to be a manager someday.
Is that as much about Maldonado as it is about people just being exasperated with the Joe Espada experience so far?
50-50 both.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Like, aside from, you know, Maldonado calling a great game and everything, part of that is a catcher is just knowing the psychology of each individual pitcher that you're working with.
Especially that
that's
one.
The part that's intriguing where he, you know, I think Maldonado and working through with either Framber or a guy like Framber or a guy like Verlander who are very different in a lot of ways mentally or psychologically, maturity, all those things. Maldonado knew how to be enough of a chameleon to handle those different guys. And I think that would probably filter over to managing really well.
I actually think today's kind of sad. Like, you remember when the Astros and White Sox used to have like actual relevant and epic battles? Like, this feels so lackluster between the two of them. Like
two old fighters.
Oh man, they played in a World Series.
I mean, the White Sox are on track to be one of the worst teams ever.
Yes.
And then the Astros are obviously one of the disappointments in baseball, you know, much to our chagrin, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I wish that there was more fizz.
More juice.
With this one. I am excited to see Framber try to come back and what that's going to look like.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And twice this week now, the really weird rule that the College Football Hall of Fame has where they won't let somebody in if their winning percentage is below 60% has come up twice now. Mike Leach yesterday. Mike Leach over the weekend. I don't know. People are up in arms about that. That's been something for a while now where Leach's, the late Mike Leach, his winning percentage is 0.596. You got to be at 60% to get in. So there's a lot of people, you know, saying, hey, man, like, how about a little leeway? You know, he's an innovator. Like, there's a lot of these offenses out here that trace their roots back to Mike Leach and Hal Mumme and the air raid and things like that. This one's a little different. Les Miles, who we'll hear from here shortly. But Les Miles, best known for his run at LSU, where he won a national championship in 2007, made it to the BCS title game against Alabama in 2011 and lost. He had a nice run at LSU. He was very successful. However, in 2023, the school, as a punishment from the NCAA, vacated 37 wins for Les Miles from the seasons 2012 through 2015 because of some impermissible benefits given to the father of a player on those teams named Vidal Alexander. A former booster gave money, impermissible benefits, to the father of Vidal Alexander. So the school vacated all of those wins for those years. If you go to Les Miles' Wikipedia page, Seth, and it has his the back of his college football coaching card, so to speak.
Yeah.
Zero wins on his Wikipedia page for those 4 years. They don't even have the real number on there. They have the vacated number on there.
Zero wins, but also zero losses, but still.
Or the losses are still there.
They're all lost. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So all the losses, that's the big whammy there.
Yep.
And that knocks him down below that 60% winning percentage that you need to be eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yes, by an even narrower margin than Leach. This knocks Les Miles down to 0.597. Now, Miles had a run at Oklahoma State that was pretty good. That got him the LSU job. And then he got fired at LSU in 2016. He was out of coaching for a couple of years and then hooked on with Kansas, which is really what probably did just as much damage as vacating wins. His 3-18 run at Kansas over a two-year period from 2019 to 2020. That was a bad Kansas team that he was.
That's one thing. I wonder if there was anything that he was even really conscious of or aware of or thinking about during that time. Somebody must have pointed it out to him at some point, right? Like, hey, if you don't turn this around, or if we have a bad season again next year, you're actually going to knock your way out of
the Hall of Fame. No, because the wins didn't get vacated till 2023.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, I got you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so he's probably like, I got plenty of cushion. I can collect my $4 million from Kansas, and I'm in easily. This is important to him.
You know, it's not an issue for Mac Brown. Mm-hmm. Mac Brown has gone and done very well for himself
second
at UNC.
Act. Yeah.
So that's, but now he hasn't had any of his old victories vacated.
Right.
You know who suffers from this as well? Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's not eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame.
His is a different rule. It's because he only coached in college for 9 years, not 10. You have to coach
at least
10 years. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So his.
These are all such weird, arbitrary, stupid
for
things.
For a sport that decides everything with voters.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's crazy. They have selection committees to decide the playoff. But yeah. But so anyway, so Les Miles is suing LSU. He's suing everybody. As they said back at the Jerky Boys, sue everybody. And he is. He's suing LSU. He is suing the NCAA. He's suing the National Football Foundation, which manages the College Football Hall of Fame. He wants his wins back, at least a few of them, just to get him over the top to put him in the Hall of Fame.
I wonder if all of these various organizations, I feel like I'm always intrigued by when colleges get sued, because I always just assume they've got like this huge, like this team of super lawyers that'll work pro bono to defend their alma mater. I don't know. That's probably not the way it actually works, but that's the way I envision it. Like, their whole law school staff has to work on the side to come up with the best arguments against them. The NCAA, I have a, you know what, Sean, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to confess to something here.
Okay.
How is the NCAA doing right now? like financially, like, I have zero. It seems like they just take hit after hit after hit.
Well,
and yet college football itself and NCAA football is incredibly popular.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how all of this turmoil from the last few years has actually affected the business side of the NCAA.
Well, I don't even know what the recourse is Like, is Les just looking to get the wins back, or is he looking to get money because he can't get into the Hall of Fame?
The pain and suffering that he's going to have from not getting into the Hall of Fame.
All the autograph sessions he'd get where he could write HOF below his name, below his autograph, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
College Football Hall of Fame isn't nearly as big a deal as a lot of the pro sports Hall of Fame.
No. The classes every year are like 20 people. No disrespect to anybody who's in the College Football Hall of Fame, but it's not as exclusive.
It's not like an extra income stream in retirement, I don't think. Like the thing that matters for college coaches was your actual the alumni from that college where you succeeded.
Yes.
And those are the people who want to hear you speak and want to pay for autographs and everything.
Yep. Success as a head coach and the Heisman Trophy. Those are the two gravy trains that sustain you after you're done doing either of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I would give Les Miles, how many wins does he need to get back to 60%? Probably like 3 or 4. I would give those back to him right now just based on this exchange. When Rich Lord and I were recording an interview with him for the Texas Bowl back in 2015, when LSU came here and played in the I don't know who the sponsor was back then, but the Texas Bowl, we were recording an interview to run on the Triple Threat, and Rich asked Les a question that he did not like.
Coach, I know you've got a lot on your plate getting ready for this game, and the last thing you needed this week was to answer questions about a possible job change, but it seems like every few years, and I think this is like the third time in the last 6 or 7 years, at this time of year specifically, you've had to say, no, I'm not leaving LSU to go to Michigan. I know you played there. I know you coached there. I would imagine heading into the meat of recruiting season, this can be a little troubling at times. Did he hang up?
No.
Oh, Coach, I thought I heard a click. I thought you really didn't like that question.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, does it become something that maybe even makes you wonder?
Excuse me, do you have to understand? I am preparing for a great bowl game. I got a wonderful team, and I am taking my own time to do this. So you want to continue this interview, then let's do so, and you edit, because this is being taped, and let's go. And don't ask that question. It's one of those things you should have asked me before we got on air.
No problem, Coach.
Okay, I'll wait.
Had you gotten instructions not to ask about that?
No. Nope. Yeah, we had. We definitely had not. We wouldn't have done it.
Part of being a college coach is that you're always recruiting. So, like, him saying, like, I'm taking my own time to do this. Like, no, that's why college coaches are better interviews than NFL coaches, because college coaches are always recruiting.
Yes.
So I don't buy that from him that, like, I'm taking my own time to do this, and you asked me a question that I totally have an answer at the ready for. Like,
I'm taking my own time to do this interview on the most popular sports station in one of the biggest recruiting hotbeds. So you better edit this and let's get going, okay?
Yeah,
I side with Rich on that one. I didn't even think Rich put the question in a way that set Les up to look bad.
It sounded like, honestly, Rich asked it in a way that was almost sounded sympathetic towards him.
Yes.
Like, oh, it sounds like it sucks, doesn't it, that you have to do all this stuff? I didn't think it was like a hard-hitting gotcha type of scenario.
He could have said, this is what comes with success for the, for our program and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And instead, he got mad at poor Rich Lord, man.
I'm always surprised. Now, for the most part, Les would usually have good answers for stuff like that. I'm always surprised, though, when coaches get to the end of a successful season, and after years of growing up watching sports and being in the coaching business for usually a good amount of time, that sometimes they seem so capsized by that question. They're like, it's so easy to give a non-answer about focusing and staying straight ahead and whatever, my agent handles anything else like that. There are 10 different ways that you can deflect that question. And I guess it speaks to the stress of the coaching profession, I think.
I guess.
The stress of coaching, recruiting, all of that going on, that sometimes they just snap.
Well, and Les was on his last legs as the LSU coach at that point. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he got fired midway through the next season, I think, in 2016.
Well, that season would have been when they almost, like, it was all but a done deal that they were going to fire him. But the LSU, the plan to hire a replacement, they didn't have enough ducks in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And they remember? They backtracked on it. It was an ugly scenario there for a while.
Yep. So, that was text message. There's that gotcha journalist, Rich Lord.
Yeah,
yes. He's known for that kind of thing.
My favorite thing about Rich there was just how easily he rolled with punches like that.
Oh, dude.
I know that probably didn't affect his day one tiny iota afterwards, did it? There was no part of him that was like, should I? Oh boy, I shouldn't have done it. I should have done it differently.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
Like even in that moment, yeah. I don't think it was really. There was no part of him that was like, all right. He was like, okay, all
right. Right.
On to the next question.
On to the next one. Yeah, and then you know, probably walking out of the studio, and I was like, man, Rich, how about that moment right there? And Rich probably like, bleep that guy. You know. Hello, gentlemen. Brandon Scott and John Lopez are here. What's happening?
And you know, I liked and enjoyed Rich, but he wasn't like a rabble rouser to me. Like he was fun and enjoyable, but I didn't feel like he was necessarily trying to shake the table. So it was shocking that Les Miles, also somebody who wasn't necessarily the super serious figure, would act like that. I was real surprised by that.
I do think Rich liked asking hard questions of interview subjects sometimes. Like he was
good at it.
I do think he enjoyed that. Yeah.
He was good at
it. Yeah. Probably most notably, Ted Johnson pointed this out when he was on with us. When Ted and Rich were both on for 610 Day last Monday. And Ted, who of course arranged the relationship that the station sustains to this day with Lisa Ann, Ted set that all up to begin with back
Ted.
2017. And this is back when Rich was like super. This is before Lisa Ann became Rich's favorite person on earth. Once he met her, like butter, you know what I mean? But Rich was super skeptical about using her as our fantasy football expert. Mm-hmm. So the first time we ever had her on, Rich started peppering her with obscure questions about like third string receivers.
Oh, wow.
And stuff.
Testing her.
Oh, like not, to try to expose
but
her.
But not even like saying it was a test. Like Rich, like, you know, like we would ask about, you know, Deshaun Watson. Ted would ask about Tom Brady. And then here's Rich asking about Sterling Shepard or something like that.
And she nailed it, right?
Nailed it. Yeah, nailed it. So anyways, that was pretty funny. How you guys doing?
Oh, awesome, man. I mean, what's there not to feel good about?
I don't know, man. We got the little Strohs, a little reunion tonight with Maldi. I said earlier in the show, I think Astro fans would drive Joe Espada to the airport if they hired Maldonado as the manager this week. I think people like Maldi still, and I think he's going to be a manager
in that role.
Someday.
I think you might be right.
I think he's going to be a manager someday.
Is that as much about Maldonado as it is about people just being exasperated with the Joe Espada experience so far?
50-50 both.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Like, aside from, you know, Maldonado calling a great game and everything, part of that is a catcher is just knowing the psychology of each individual pitcher that you're working with.
Especially that
that's the part that's intriguing where he, you know, I think Maldonado and working through with either Framber or a guy like Framber or a guy like Verlander, who are very different in a lot of ways mentally or psychologically, maturity, all those things. Maldonado knew how to be enough of a chameleon to handle those different guys. And I think that would probably filter over to managing really well.
I actually think today's kind of sad. Like, you remember when the Astros and White Sox used to have, like, actual relevant and epic battles? Like, this feels so lackluster between the two of them. Like
two old fighters.
Oh, man. They played in a World Series.
I mean, the White Sox are on track to be one of the worst teams ever.
Yeah. Yes.
And then the Astros are obviously one of the disappointments in baseball, you know, much to our chagrin, obviously.
Yeah.
But, man, I wish that there was more fizz,
more juice
with this one. I am excited to see Framber try to come back and what that's going to look like.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.